Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
He infected you.
He didn't have to infect me. Living in his body, pretending to be him, day in, day out. I was a better William than he was. William didn't die. He evolved. I am William.
No, you're not.
Well, if you can't tell the difference, does it matter?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Decoding TV, a podcast currently covering the HBO original series Westworld. I am David Chen.
I'm Siddhant Adlakha.
Welcome to the podcast, everyone. So right off the top, I just want to remind everyone that we're now Decoding TV. And I mentioned this last week on the podcast, but Decoding TV is now going to be covering other shows, hopefully year-round. But it heavily depends on whether people tune into the next episode. And our next episode is going to be about She-Hulk, Attorney at Law, which is a new series on Disney+. Siddhant and I are really excited about continuing Decoding TV. We hope you will stick around. And just to be clear, in terms of how this works, it will just be on the same feed. So, like, you don't need to unsubscribe. You don't need to resubscribe to another thing. Just don't unsubscribe. That's all you need to do. And so we'd really appreciate if you kept it tuned in to Decoding TV, and listen to our next episode. We've had such a great time chatting with each other and getting to know the folks in the audience for this show. And, we'd love to continue this thing year round. So please tune into our next, She-Hulk recap podcast. Before we get to the episode, I have a big announcement today. And that is that I have launched a new website, decodingtv.com, which will house the premium versions of both this podcast and A Cast of Kings. Now, if you're listening to this on the free feed, you know, through your iTunes or your Spotify's or whatever, like, the show will continue to be free and that will not change. But if you want to sign up for a better premium experience with the podcast, which is going to include ad-free episodes, early access to episodes, the ability to comment on episodes, then there is a new place for that at decodingtv.com. This used to be at my personal Patreon page at patreon.com/DaveChen, and I am moving all my TV-related content from patreon.com/DaveChen to decodingtv.com. If you were a previous patron of mine at $10 or above, I will give you a free trial to the new site. So just reach out to me via Twitter or Patreon or email at decodingtv@gmail.com to get your free trial. But decodingtv.com is going to be the new place where all the premium stuff happens and where you can support this show. So we hope you'll consider going to decodingtv.com. It's pretty cool, like, the way it's laid out, and you can subscribe to A Cast of Kings and you can subscribe to Decoding TV and get all the private access to the members-only feed at the site. And I hope you'll consider it, because we want to make this into a going concern that lasts year-round and for a long time to come, and we really want you to help us to build it. So if you've enjoyed this show at any point in the past couple months and you feel that you want us to continue doing what we're doing and you want to support us, very easy to do that by going to decodingtv.com. You know, Siddhant, I've been covering TV via TV-related podcasts for many years, probably like a decade at this point, and I've never really had one place that's going to house, like, just that stuff, you know? And decodingtv.com is that place. So I hope you'll consider joining and becoming a member, and you'll be supporting the show and us doing this long into the future. It does take money to do the show. I pay all the people who I podcast with. And Siddhant, we've upgraded your microphone recently, right? You're sounding pretty good today.
I know. For those of you who can see me on video, can see the mic. And for those of you who are just hearing me, you can probably tell a difference as well. I sound like a real podcaster.
It sounds amazing. Sounds amazing. So, again, decodingtv.com, consider becoming a member, and you will be supporting both this show and A Cast of Kings, getting a bunch of great benefits. Thanks so much for tuning in to Decoding Westworld this season. It's only because we've gotten such a big audience and community that we feel like something like this is even possible to attempt. So hope to see you over there on decodingtv.com. There is lots of exciting stuff coming, potentially, if people join decodingtv.com. But like, there's a bunch of shows that we want to cover, and it's only going to be possible if people become members of the website. So we hope to see you over there. Okay. Let's talk about some of the emails. On this week's episode of the podcast of Decoding TV, we're going to be covering Westworld Season 4, Episode 8, Que Sera Sera. And before we get to the episode, let's talk about some follow-ups, some emails from the previous weeks. Okay? This email comes in from Chris Nye. And by the way, you can email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. Chris Nye writes in, I accept that the world is set in New York, but I really want to know what's going on outside. Is it possible that Seattle is free from host control? Fleepless in Seattle? Are we fleepless in Seattle, Sedan? Do you think? Do you think we're fleepless
in
Seattle?
We absolutely are. No, I'm no question about it. Like, the moment this suggestion came up, I'm like, you know what? This is canon now. It has to be.
We Westworld is fleepless in Seattle, basically, is what you're trying to say.
Obviously.
Yeah. Okay, this question slash comment comes in from Amelia, writing into decodingtv@gmail.com. Amelia writes, hey, David and Sedan, I've been watching Westworld since the very beginning, and I am yet since day one to meet another person who is watching the show. Which leads me to the question, how come Westworld hasn't been canceled? Season 3 was a flop of epic proportions, and yet the show remains and most of the cast haven't left? Personally, I think the writers went too far in trying to throw us a dummy, quote-unquote, as frequently as possible, when Season 1 had an excellent story to tell that could have been developed into a more realistic evolution of the Wyatt story. I think it's time to wrap the show up. There are too many loose ends, and the introduction of Caleb last season and Frankie this season feels ill-conceived and really a pointless storyline. Anyway, I will continue watching, but I find myself believing in a satisfying ending less and less with each passing week. Thanks for the great show. Greetings from sunny Netherlands. A couple of things I wanted to remark upon in this episode. In this email. First of all, there have been a lot of questions as to whether or not there's going to be a Westworld season 5. Mm-hmm. As far as we know, that has not yet been confirmed, right? I don't believe it has officially been confirmed that there's going to be Westworld season 5. Many of the cast and crew have spoken about how there is a plan for a season 5. Like, they have a plan, like an outline for what season 5 will be. And so, you know, like, if it was renewed, like, there would be something there. But season 5 has not been officially renewed yet. I think it's going to be a tough bet, Sedan. It's a tough situation. It's probably on the bubble because the show is very expensive and requires extensive logistical planning. And certainly, what we saw as to how this episode and season ended does not disabuse me of the notion that next season will also be very complicated to do. And the ratings have not been great. You know, they've taken a significant hit. I will tell you that listenership for this podcast has fallen quite a bit since season one, right? So, still very substantial, you know, a lot of people listening to this, but, a much smaller group than we started season one with. So I think it's a hard sell for HBO to want to renew this. Now, of course, by the time very possible by the time you are listening to this, the renewal has already been announced. But like at this moment,
or the cancellation.
At this point, it feels really dicey to me that there's going to be season 5. Do you have any thoughts on this matter, Sedan?
Well, I think the creators are clearly of that mind as well, that they don't know whether or not the story is going to continue. And, you know, not to jump the gun too much, but given the way this episode goes, I think, you know, once again, they're sort of hedging their bets, a kind of, we'll see, maybe this is it, maybe it isn't.
Really? You think this episode was a we'll see episode? I don't agree with that.
We'll get to why.
Okay.
But no, I mean, there are a lot of changes happening at what is now Warner Brothers Discovery, a lot of HBO Max originals being taken off the site. The movie Batgirl, as you know, was canceled. That was supposed to be, at one point, an HBO Max original. So there are things that are constantly shifting behind the scenes. And, you know, Westworld is an expensive show. And granted, it's not an HBO Max exclusive thing. It's HBO proper. It airs on television. But those ratings haven't been great compared to previous seasons either. So as far as we know, shrug.
Indeed. We will see. And I'm really curious what you think about this episode. One last thing I want to mention before we get to the actual episode, which is just that I am going to upload all video versions of our conversations to YouTube. And you can find that at decodingtv.com/YouTube. So if you like, I had started uploading with my personal YouTube channel and I was like, I want like a more formal place for these videos. I don't just want to put them on my personal YouTube channel. So the plan is for every one of our conversations to go on YouTube at decodingtv.com/YouTube, unless there is a catastrophic technical problem. So if you're watching this, it means we made it. We made it. All right. Season 4, Episode 8, Que Sera Sera. What do you think about this episode overall, Siddhant, the season finale of Westworld?
Well, first of all, the title basically translates to whatever will be, you know? I guess we'll see. And I wonder if that also carries over to how the writers feel about whether or not they'll have another season. Much to think about. But before we get to that, you know, I've been really positive on the way this season has gone so far.
Yes, I think no one can deny that we have been very complimentary of a lot of the decisions made in this season so far, right?
And David, you and I have not spoken in any sort of detail about our thoughts on this episode
yet.
No,
this is the first exposure we have to our thoughts.
Okay, I don't know how you felt about it just yet, but I was not a fan.
It was pretty rough. I think this episode was pretty rough. The season finale was not great. Messy at best and bad at worst.
And here's the thing. When it comes to a season finale or a series finale, we don't know whether this is one of those yet. But when it comes to a finale, like, I have to temper myself. I have to ask myself, okay, how much of my reaction is based purely on what I was expecting versus what I got.
Mm-hmm.
And usually I'm really good about that. And of course, you know, this time there were certain things that I thought the show might do that it maybe didn't, maybe did. I'm still not entirely sure. But I think even divorced from that, even divorced from my understanding of where I thought it was going, I just think it was a really, like you said, a really rough episode to get through. I really liked that opening scene, but from then on, it is so much of it is just characters explaining things to each other that we already know,
mm-hmm.
and not explaining anything new.
Well, not only that, but like bringing back old characters for no apparent reason at all to do things, you know, like that's a huge problem with this episode as well. But I think the problem can best be summed up by the following email from Brian Luria in Tampa, Florida, who writes into decodingtv@gmail.com. I took note that William, the man in black, shoots all three hosts from last episodes slightly off-center, which hypothetically means the Pearl is still good to go. Now, Brian wrote that email in days ago before this episode actually aired. And when I heard that, I'm like, wow, that'd be pretty disappointing if that was what happened. You know, but also it wouldn't surprise me if that was what happened. That would be classic Westworld, right? And because the man in black murders three hosts last episode, Bernard, Maeve, and Charloris, right? So it's like, okay, I guess all three of them are dead, maybe. But what would certainly be terrible, Siddhant, is if only one of them came back and the other two did not for no good reason. That would certainly be unforgivable as a storytelling device, wouldn't you say?
That would certainly be a bit of a cop-out to do it one episode later.
Indeed.
Can you imagine if they did that?
Not only am I imagining it, I think it's almost certain. Well, I mean, you know, we'll discuss it. we'll discuss it, you know, but it seems very possible that those characters will come back later based on what we see at the end of this show. So,
no comment.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the case for this episode. You know, rather than, I mean, there's a few plot lines, right? There's Man in Black, there's Charloris, they kind of go on, they kind of converge, right? There's the Christina mm-hmm. Teddy storyline, which is kind of just treading water for most of it, in my opinion, and like just explaining things to you via exposition. And then there is the Caleb Frankie Stubbs storyline. So those are like basically the three storylines. But let's talk about the case for this episode, right? What do we like about this episode? Now, I will start by saying I thought the opening scene was pretty cool. It looked expensive. It looked like that scene cost like $500,000 for just this one scene, which, by the way, from my perspective, was almost completely unnecessary to the actual plot of the show. Like, yes, you're showing like mayhem, you know, hosts killing humans killing hosts, you know, like... But first of all, we already kind of saw that last episode, so it's like, I don't know why they needed to stage an entirely new set piece. Except they did bring back, so this episode, they did bring back a lot of the host actors from season one of the show, right? Including, as you refer to him, Wolverine-looking guy. he is a host from the first season of the show. We saw later also, like, another host from the first season of the show encounters William the Man in Black. And so, like, it's kind of it felt kind of a swan song style in that way, because it's like, oh, maybe, like, this is the last time you're ever going to see these people again, right? Like, so we're bringing everyone back for one last ride. But yeah,
all those characters that you definitely remember,
whose names you definitely remember and were crucial to the plot. But yeah, I thought the opening scene was pretty awesome. And you know, just like a cool action set piece. Well done, like really amazing sort of production design, set dressing, like it all looked great.
I love the sound design of it too. The way the bullets seem to be screaming through the air.
Yeah, and William says at the end, you know the rules, winner takes all, I guess. Oh, my favorite part of this whole episode was actually William killing the sniper guy. And he says, quote, fucking camper, which, by the way, if you've ever played a video game, camper is a very video game specific term. Are you familiar?
No, I've never played a video game.
So a camper is basically somebody who... Did you say you've never played a video game? Come on, Sam.
I've played the Godfather game, as we know.
if you're a patron, but yes, a camper is a term for somebody who waits in one location that is high traffic, and they just pick off people who like run through that area. So it's a very very video game term, and they are generally despised. So much to the point where, honestly, you will get, like, I have played many video games where I'm like getting a legit kill. I'm getting a legit, like, I ran to a place and I took out the gun and shot someone in the head, and then people will say, fucking camper. I'm like, I wasn't camping. I was just playing the game. You know, like, it's used as a very harsh pejorative in video games. So
is that not what, and you know, I know that, you know, real life and video games aren't the same thing, but is that not what you would do in real life? And like,
to maximize your chance of survival, you mean?
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out why it's looked down upon in the game, because it makes it like less fun, less fair.
Yeah, well, because if you're the person getting assassinated in the game, like it really is frustrating, because you're like, it happens when you like walk into a room and you get shot in the head. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, typically you're like engaging with someone, there's back and forth, you're trading bullets back and forth, you know, you encounter someone from far away, you see them, da da da, as opposed to you walk in a room and you die. And it's because someone was just sitting there the whole time. You know, it's less fun for the person who's getting shot. So
it sounds like the camper was right. I don't know. It sounds like the camper was smart.
Wow. Siddhanth, do not join me in Call of Duty. That's what I've learned this episode.
Fair enough.
So anyway, any other thoughts on the opening scene before we move on to these other plot lines?
Unnecessary, but fun. Really well put together.
Yeah. Let's save the Christina Teddy stuff for the end because it's how the episode literally ends. I think we can dispose of the Caleb Frankie Stubbs storyline pretty quickly, though, right?
Yeah, let's get it out of the way.
So Caleb Frankie Stubbs, they're on the way to escape the city. The entire Caleb Frankie Stubbs storyline is Caleb and Frankie have some father-daughter bonding moments. I still wish the show had more time to explore the idea of Frankie encountering a... Frankie has been fighting machines her whole life, right? And she's now encountered a machine that has her dad's consciousness or some version of it in it. It's obviously failing because, as you know, we see in this episode, right? They have still not successfully been able to implant human consciousness into machines. Something about the programming doesn't take, which is really interesting that they're kind of decades later, they're still kind of holding to that idea. I think, again, a lot of this season has to do with, like, what's the difference between humans and hosts? What's the difference between having a body and not having a body? Like, these are all things that the episodes and the series has tried to explore. And so I'm a bit bummed that she's just kind of like accepts that, you know, think of like Sarah Connor in Terminator 2. Like, it took her a while before she's like, hey, I'm okay having a machine who tried to murder me a bunch of times and looks exactly like the same as the guy who tried to murder me. I'm okay, like, teaming up with this thing, right? But she needed to be won over. And I think it would have actually been, like, dramatically interesting for her to kind of need to be won over. Instead, they kind of just, like, accept that, oh, you know, he's a machine with my dad's consciousness and I'm cool with that. And so that's a bit of a bummer. But I do think, like, the acting from both actors is pretty solid, and it's nice that they kind of – there's this emotional catharsis that they get to have time together. And, like, it invites you to imagine what it would be like if you didn't get to see your child grow up, but then all of a sudden you went to sleep for, you know, 3 hours, and then all of a sudden they had grown by, like, 20 years. Like, that would be, like, really mind-blowing, and I think Aaron Paul plays it pretty well.
For sure. Again, like from a basic emotional standpoint, like, you know, family reunion, oh, I missed you. Like, that sort of melodrama, it works, even though, you know, it does the Westworld thing of not fully committing to its sci-fi ideas, even though those ideas are sort of hovering in the background. Like you said, about the clash between, you know, her father being the most important human in her life and her spending her whole life fighting machines. And what if the thing that she loves the most and misses the most and the thing that she hates the most, what if those are combined into
super
one being?
Super interesting ideas to potentially explore. But instead of that, we get Clementine coming in and murdering everyone.
Yeah, that's another, like, Clementine, she's been around in the background of this season, and I guess all of a sudden in episode 8, they decide, oh yeah, she's an important character now. A lot of this episode kind of felt that way, like it was the finale to a season that didn't actually happen. The same way, you know, The Rise of Skywalker felt like a sequel to a movie that didn't exist.
Hey, Siddhant, can you do me a favor? I'm getting a little bit of audio leakage from your... Siddhant, I actually think you're giving it a little too much credit because your description would make... Like, the Clementine thing certainly fits that description. Like, why are we spending time with Clementine at this point in the show? Like, it makes no sense because the rest of the season has done nothing to explain what's going on with Clementine. It does feel like a piece of plot that was, like, cut from the season. Like, Clementine's plot was cut from the season, it feels like, right?
Hold on. Did you say I'm giving it too much credit by comparing it to The Rise of Skywalker?
Yes, because I feel like the rest of the episode, there's stuff that is arguably, like, completely pointless. Like, again, like, the opening scene with William, you know, this other scene with William where he encounters these guys in the middle of the forest. Like, none of that stuff even needed to happen at all. Like, that doesn't feel like the end of, the end of a show that we weren't watching. It felt more like, what are we doing here? Like, why are we, you don't even need to do, like, William and Charloris are going to have an encounter. Like, just get to that point. We already know that William's all messed up in the head and he likes killing people. Like, we don't need to spend more time on that. You know what I mean? In my opinion, or at least you don't need two of those scenes. Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know why we needed all that. So anyway, the whole Clementine thing is like a massive disappointment. It actually, honestly, I feel like would have been more satisfying potentially if it was either Charloris that kind of comes in and messes with them on her way out the door. Mm-hmm. Or it was just some complete rando that, like, you know, like, but it just felt like, what was the point of introducing Clementine? She kills Stubbs, which is really sad. Very unceremonious death for Stubbs. And then Clementine herself is murdered. So it's like, what was the point of that? Like, why couldn't Stubbs have just been murdered on their way out? You know, like, it felt like they wanted to give Clementine something to do, but this is a very clunky way to do it. What do you think?
Yeah, it felt for a moment when I was trying to justify it to myself, like, okay, so they're setting up, you know, a future plot line about Clementine trying to find the surviving humans and this is the 279th version of me, so it's glitching up out a bit. The infiltrate mm-hmm, the humans, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But then she dies, and it's like Frankie is trying to find out. Frankie pretends not to have a bullet, I assume because she wants to know what Clementine's plan is. But, like, that... Why?
It's so... And then she's like, I forgot to tell you, I have one bullet left. Which I would have... I was trying to think, like, was that a callback to something from earlier? Because she says it in such a significant way. You know, I'm like, is it... Have they been talking about bullets all season in a way that I didn't know about? You know, like...
And the thing is, even if, you know, Frankie is trying to find out what Clementine's plan is, and that's why she doesn't shoot her, you know, why wait a full couple of minutes for Clementine to beat the shit out of your dad before shooting her in the head? And good shot, center shot, so we know Clementine is dead.
Do we?
Stubbs, not really sure.
Yeah.
I never know how to feel when I see a host, quote unquote, die, even though Stubbs is my favorite character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he gets, like, stabbed brutally through the eye and just like, all right, maybe he's dead. I don't know. That's becoming a problem.
Yeah. It's like the whole time I'm like, why is any of this happening? Why Clementine? Why is she saying you were wrong? I have one bullet left. I was maybe if that was a line that a host had used earlier in the season, you know, it would have been satisfying if like a host had killed her friend earlier and was like, oh, like you don't have one bullet. I have one bullet left. And then she like brings the line back, you know, like that would make sense.
See what I mean about this feeling like it was the finale to a different season that didn't happen.
And it's just like so weird because you as the viewer are just trying to like help the show out by like, you know, giving all these justifications when it's tough. So, okay. And then Frankie and Caleb like say goodbye at the dock and it's actually kind of emotional. Mm-hmm. Caleb says, your father died long ago. Whatever I am, I've died before. This isn't so bad. I got to live every parent's greatest dream. I got to see my child grow up, end quote. I mean, regardless of how ridiculous the plot machinations are, it is a little bit emotional. Yeah.
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 All right. We can be done with Caleb finally. I like him. I like Aaron Paul. But if, you know, Westworld continues and there's no more Caleb, I'm not really going to be too torn up about it.
Wow. You were much more positive on the Caleb train not too long ago. And now you're off the Caleb train, it seems.
Let's say, like, regardless of how I feel about his, you know, role in the show so far, I do feel his final scene was satisfying enough mm-hmm. that I can, you know, again, internally justify it to myself as satisfying rather than me not caring. So
I don't think we're going to see Caleb again in Westworld. If there is a Westworld season 5, I don't think we're going to see him. So, mm-hmm. So we'll see. Okay. So the other stuff, Charloris survives the bullet going through her head because I guess it missed the pearl. And then these guys kind of come and they bring her body and they reanimate her, which is kind of cool. And she's like, make me stronger. I'm like, oh my gosh, are they going to give her some like ultra powered like mech suit body? No, it's just Tessa Thompson's body, which is very impressive, You know, she's obviously an impressive person, physique, but she looks exactly the same, except she's slightly more resistant to knife stabbings. That's kind of the...
She has gloves now.
She has gloves now, and she could get stabbed. Bullets apparently still potentially harmful, but, like, you know, knife stabbings are okay. I mean, they give her one of the kind of old school bodies, basically, right? Like, from like first gen bodies that have the metallic, you know, the new mm-hmm. bodies are like flesh and blood more, and those old ones are metallic. So, and she's like, "Leave me my scars, so the makeup people don't need to do a whole new thing with this one."
But she's got gloves on anyway, so you don't really see the scars for the mm-hmm. rest of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
So then what does she do? She kind of like goes to the – she finds the Bernard message. We learn that the Bernard message was intended for her. And then she stomps on the virtual city, and then we learn that basically like the Christina mind pearl is underneath it all, and she kind of extracts it. Mm-hmm. And we later mm-hmm. learn that that is the – it is a mind pearl of like a storyteller mind pearl is kind of
yeah.
what it is said on the computer screen. And the reason why she extracts the Christina mind pearl, we later learn. So, I mean, there's a lot of scenes, Siddhant. There's a lot of time that passes. But really what happens is she encounters William again. They have a fight. And then Charloris wins the fight. Like, that's basically what happens. And she kind of puts the mind pearl in to the Sublime so that something can happen. Like I wasn't exactly sure. What we have heard from previous episodes is that they're trying to save a piece of this. Like the world is doomed, everyone's screwed, but they're trying to save a piece of this world for the future. And that Christina / the storyteller is somehow key to that. What do you think is actually going on here? Do you have a sense of what the explanation is?
Sorry, to those of you who are just listening and aren't watching this on video, you have just missed my face just dropping entirely, just thinking about this stuff. So what basically happens with Charloris over the course of this episode is, okay, so Bernard records a message with some instructions at the end of the previous episode.
Yes.
And this episode ends with Charloris just kind of following those instructions. Not really instructions, but sort of really just following his instructions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't help that we find out her like motivation for this episode only towards the end. It also really doesn't help that we still don't know what her whole deal was this season when it comes to transcendence. Like I thought I had an explanation last week, and again, I gave the show a bit too much credit.
What is bizarre is for a show that has so much exposition, I don't think we ever got like a Charloris sits down and explains exactly all the details of her plan. Like that never happened this season, right?
Because William even says, transcendence, you were playing the wrong game. Okay, but what was the
game?
What are you talking about?
What was the game that she was playing?
And then, you know, some of her, I guess her final words are like, a test run by her if she chooses to. If I choose to give her a chance, and I do, I choose to give her the chance. I hope she takes... What the fuck are you talking about? Like, I get it. All right, you gotta do another Westworld. Okay, but like, where is this coming from a character standpoint?
Yes, what is motivating it?
You know, like, like, I get that these are the instructions that Bernard has left as like an option for like, you know, digital life, virtual life continuing in some sense, because they talk about like the world ending. Oh, humans are going to be extinct in a couple of months. Like, what? Why? How? What are you talking? Again, what are you talking about? All we've seen in this show, all we know about this premise is that New York, this one city, has, you know, fallen, has, you know, devolved into mayhem. Is this happening in the other parks or the other cities in the world? Is it just relegated to this one? What about the outliers? Like, are they dying? What, like, again, if you're talking about like something long term, like hundreds, thousands, millions of years from now, you know, sentient life, biological life is going to be gone, but we're still going to be here. That's different. But they mention explicitly, like, oh, all the humans are going to be dead in a couple of months. Huh? What? I'm sorry. What? Which? Like, we've clearly missed something. Something has, like, again.
Well, I guess the idea is that seen. The idea is that, like, this city is the world, I guess. And, you know, assume that, like, everyone who's, like, 99% of the remaining human and host population is in this city, right? Which, as we've already discussed, contains landmarks from multiple major cities in our real reality right now, right? So this is, like, the every city. It's, like, the mega city that has all the cities in it. And assume that, like, William has turned everyone against each other. So, like, everyone's going to be dead because everyone's killing themselves and so on, right?
But here's the thing. At one point, Shaloris in a previous episode makes this announcement that is broadcast to other hosts who run other cities.
Mm.
Right? She says that, you know, we're going to be shutting down your cities, all your cities. And I think like that's meant to imply that there are other cities like this all over the world. And I think we see another one of those cities in that flashback where Frankie is young and they rescue Jay.
Yeah,
that's not New York. That's a different city. And so,
well, I got nothing for you there. I got nothing for you, Saddam.
Yeah, I guess we're meant to assume that this is happening there too. But are all these cities controlled by this one tower, or is it just this one city?
It would just
help me figure out what Shaloris's plan is,
right,
what her objective is, what's going on with her as a character.
Well, to be fair, Saddam, I can't believe you're making me defend the show.
Oh my God.
I think the broad strokes of Shaloris's plan are obvious, right? Like, she is trying to create a utopia and she failed. Now, what was that utopia going to look like? And why precisely did she fail? I think those questions are up in the air, right?
Yeah.
I have some sense of what the answers are. Like, okay, what was the utopia going to consist of? It was going to be hosts running everything. Humans subjugated to them, potentially people in transcended bodies or their minds are in the cloud or whatever. Like, you know, it was going to be that, something having to do with that. And why did she fail? It's because hosts like hanging around humans too much, right? Like, and the humans infected them in various ways, including obviously the biggest infection of all, William infecting his host self, right? And so it's meant to be like a Shakespearean tragic, like hoisted by my own petard kind of.
Yeah.
You know, I get the broad strokes. I think the execution is really lacking, right? So
yeah, and I think, you know, even some of what you said, I'm a little conflicted about, just because I don't think whatever her plan was still involved humans. I think she also mentions that, you know, the hosts in human cities and in physical bodies are, you know, a stepping stone to what comes next. But what comes next is not, like, is it a Sublime-like thing? But it's not, you know what? Forget it. I'm malfunctioning again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Anyway, William's dead now.
Yeah, and I guess
Bernard left her a gun, and she went pew-pew.
Yeah, I think that was probably meant to be, like, way more satisfying than it was. Because I remember watching the episode where Bernard leaves her the gun, and he, like, kind of crouches back, and I'm like, oh, he's just going to leave something that's going to come into play for the future. But let's just say, you know, M. Night Shyamalan signs you are not. I'm going to put that out there. Like, this is not, like, a swing-away situation. It wasn't very satisfying when it's like, oh, guess what? He stashed a gun there, and that, you know, like, I think you're supposed to be, as a viewer, the showrunners want you to feel like, oh my gosh, so cool, you know? But I did not have that reaction. It's just kind of like, oh.
It could have just.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could have just been her own gun, and it would have like not made the slightest difference whether or not Bernard had left that gun there.
You need something to be more elaborate than that if it's going to be, like, he had to predict, like, 18 other things that might have happened, you know, for it to be like, oh, interesting. Like, and those things need to be thematically interesting. It can't just be he's predicting actual events, you know? Like,
yeah, and just, like, purely from a thematic standpoint, if you are setting up a story where, you know, Bernard and Chaloris have had some kind of interaction, and you establish that, okay, Chaloris does not trust Bernard because their perspectives are so opposed to each other. You know, you kind of do have that, again, like, again, hovering somewhere in the background. We know kind of what Chaloris wants. We sort of know what Bernard wants, but there's nothing that would have suggested that, you know, had Bernard left this gun and these instructions 2 episodes ago, that Chaloris wouldn't have followed them, you know, that she wouldn't have done this. Like, it's not like...
Right, right.
It's just her reaching out to pick up a gun. It's not her reaching out to, you know, to turn her back on her previous worldview.
Right, right.
Because she doesn't have a choice there anyway, because everything's kind of screwed.
I mean, to some degree, the case for the gun reaching is that, like, by killing William, she's making the decision of, like, agreeing to Bernard's plan, right? She could just, the alternative, I guess, is she could just let herself die, right? You know what I'm saying? And so thematically, like, self-preservation is like a vote for Bernard's plan, and kind of a vote for killing her own creation. But I would agree that it doesn't feel as satisfying as I think they wanted it to feel.
Yeah, because the thing is, like, in previous episodes, even though we haven't been fully clear on her plan, what transcendence is, all that, it was still really intriguing to watch. It was always, you know, you could always tell what was on Chaloris's mind, because Tessa Thompson was just so delightful and megalomaniacal. But underneath that, there was this sense of longing that, you know, I need a place, my people need a place, and I need to be the one to create it at any cost. In this, maybe I missed something. Maybe I did. But I will say that it doesn't really feel like at any point we are along for the ride with her. Because anyway, we don't find out what her plan is until the very end. But, you know, when she's just kind of moping around in the chopper for a bit, I couldn't really get a sense of what it was that she was going through emotionally.
Right, right.
Because she doesn't seem to have a really strong reaction to seeing her world go up in flames either, other than just, huh, I'm annoyed with William.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, we probably got that reaction like a couple episodes ago when she was on the roof and like her arm started bleeding. You know, that was kind of that moment, I think. But yeah, she is weirdly inaccessible this episode as a character. I think, you know,
I don't get why she does what she does at the very end when she kills herself. I do not understand that in the slightest.
Yeah, I mean, I got nothing, man. I got nothing. I think I am disappointed in this episode because this show is notorious for doing like tons of exposition dumps, like explaining everything to a degree that I think is too much. And there's so much that is actually unexplained in this episode, right? Like, why does Chaloris decide to kill herself? What is? I actually am not, to this moment, I'm still not 100% sure what's going on with Christina. So we know that Christina is a program that kind of inhabits. The idea is cool. She's like this digital program that like inhabits the world. She can interact with people. People can interact with her, but she's not physically there. That's like a cool idea.
That's what I thought it was last week, if you recall. But
yeah,
this week kind of gave me a different sense of it.
I think that's still accurate. But what is also clear is like the people around her, including Teddy and including Maya, are all just Christina projections. And it's not clear like who around her is a Christina projection. Like, is her boss a Christina projection? Like, it's unclear.
Yeah.
But anyway, a lot of these people are Christina projections, right? And so that part seems pretty clear to me. What do you have any thoughts on that? Or
so the sense I got when it comes to maybe this doesn't make that much of a difference, but the mechanics of it. What I got last week was, oh, you know, she somehow exists out in the real world. Her, you know, digital consciousness is in some way projected into the physical world. Mm. I think just purely from a mechanical standpoint, it's actually the opposite. It is that the real world is then turned into like this 3D like map, and she's interacting with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, she's located like under that, you know, red projection of it.
Right.
So I guess, you know, there's not that much of a difference really. Like she...
So,
you know,
certainly the show doesn't seem to be really concerned with the mechanics of it. And I don't think we're... Based on what happens at the end of this episode, I don't think we're ever going to find out like how it actually quote unquote worked. So whatever.
Yeah, I guess the only reason I find myself then questioning that is then, okay, if that's the case, if we don't actually have any kind of mechanic in this world for, you know, a being to exist both virtually and physically, then that throws the whole like transcendence thing for a loop. Like I don't understand what's happening with that, you know, because in my mind those two things were connected.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that was me jumping to conclusions and, you know, like you mentioned, giving the show too much credit. So I'll say that's on me. I was able to follow what was happening with the Christina stuff, mostly because she basically just turns to the camera and like explains all of it.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, well, I was creating all of this myself to reveal the secrets to myself. It was me the whole time. It's like, that's nice, I guess. It doesn't, like, at the end of it, I didn't really get anything out of it. Like, this so-called twist. You know, if anything, it made things less interesting.
I think when you get to the end of the Christina storyline, my reaction is like, what was the point of all that? Like, what were we supposed to take away from Christina's journey this season? The journey that she goes on this season is basically just realizing what she is. That's the whole journey, you know? There's nothing really beyond that. Go ahead.
Which is not all that different from, like, the first season, but in this, they don't do anything with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it ends in the same place that season three ends, which is like, oh, I see the beauty in the world. That's very nice. Okay, you see the beauty in the world, but like now what? You know, I was at first thrilled with the fact that season four kind of felt like a soft reboot, but it feels now that we've reached the end of it, now again, it feels like, oh, so now the story is going to begin now that we've actually, this is where all our cards are on the table. This is where we sort of kind of explain what's really going on, but there's no real point to it other than, well, here's what happens next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. And I will say, though, Siddhant, that in my favor, I did call that tree was really weird looking and probably going to be significant later. And it was. Huh? Remember that tree from episode one or two? Yeah, there you go. Give me that applause. That's right.
You did it.
Thank you.
you called that something was not what it seemed in Westworld.
But yeah, she kind of like talks about, Maya kind of talks about the tree and we only see part of it. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, Siddhant, I think you and I are both pretty disappointed that Academy Award winning actress Ariana DeBose, you know, is a mental projection of Evan Rachel Wood, who herself is a mental projection, you know?
Yeah, and hey, if you thought it was weird and unaddressed that, you know, a white host consciousness ends up in, you know, a black host body in the form of Chaloris, how weird is it that, you know, just she, like, Christina just makes up, like, a black best friend that doesn't seem to be based on any real person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a commentary on the black best friend trope in TV shows. Do you ever think of that, Siddhant?
Oh, I'm sure that's what it is. Yeah, I didn't. I should have. I'm sorry.
I think that... what I'm saying is I don't even get what Christina... Like, what is Christina at this point? Like, is she a copy of Dolores that was in the system? Is she a version of Dolores that was in the system, programmed to do storytelling? Like, no one ever really sat down and explained it, right? So
I think my understanding of that is somewhat clear, but I find myself second guessing just because I thought I was clear on a lot of things last week.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that this is whatever she is, you know, she is created from, you know, the pool of the Dolores that we were following through season three, who, you know,
who died. Who died at the end of season three. Yeah.
Basically died, but, you know, she has some residual memory, some residual consciousness.
Yeah, when you say all this, so you're just making all this up. Like, no one ever explained this to you, right? Yeah, no one ever said.
But the fact that Christina sees Dolores,
yes,
as we know her,
yeah,
in that dress, she becomes, it goes back to season one with the idea of the bicameral mind. You have your, you know, your conscious consciousness, but you have this voice talking to you. You know, which could be your own voice, could be the voice of God. And in this case, it seems to be the remnants of Dolores that are manifesting as Teddy, the beater guy who had previously died, her boss, Maya. It makes sense when it comes to Teddy, because Teddy, you know, was a person who existed, right, so to speak. A host that existed. The others is just sort of like, I'm going to make up stuff that's unconnected to everything else. Like, because finding out those people weren't real is like, oh, okay. Finding out Teddy's not real, like you kind of see it coming because Christina has this realization, oh, I made up everyone, but doesn't think that she made up Teddy in that moment. It's like, it's right there.
Well, it's like...
Chrissy, it's right there.
It's kind of like robots, like, why did you program me to feel pain? Like, why does your version of Teddy need to experience horror at the fact that he doesn't exist? You know what I mean? Like, he's like, wait, I'm not here, am I? And it's like, why would you make a version of Teddy that is, like, sad that he doesn't exist, Christina? Come on. But anyway...
Ms. Abernathy, I don't feel so good.
I agree that she seems to be some version of Dolores. I'm just stunned that we got to the end of 8 episodes and there was no, like, succinct, clear explanation of how Christina / Dolores survived at the end of season 3. Like, that is just like...
Yeah, and...
I'm shocked.
I'm not even concerned with a succinct explanation. I just... want to feel like there was some kind of emotional point to it beyond her realizing, oh, this is what's really going on.
Yeah.
Like, it's a slow unraveling that leads to nothing. It's like if, you know, and spoilers for The Sixth Sense.
Yes.
It's like if we find out at the end of The Sixth Sense that, oh, you know, he was, you know, a ghost the whole time, but he never had a wife. It's not about, you know, his marriage having fallen apart. He's just a guy who's just walking through the world. Ha ha, I'm alive. Oh, no, I'm dead.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, not emotionally grounded.
There's nothing emotionally satisfying about Christine. And I think it's honestly because the show is too ambitious, you know, which is like... not a terrible thing, but they wanted to tell some big story with Christina probably. And then they got to the end and they're like, oh, they don't really have anything. Like, they don't have... The goods aren't there when it comes to the Christina storyline and like her emotional arc. Now, she does make a very shocking decision at the end of the episode. She's like, we're going to do one final test, a game of my own making, a dangerous game. And so she is uploaded to the Sublime by Charloris, who Charloris like kills herself.
I guess.
And then... Christina recreates Westworld inside of the Sublime, I guess, is kind of my sense of what's going on.
Yeah, I don't really get what's happening from a broader perspective. Like, okay, new game. This game is a test of something, maybe survival, maybe evolution. But the fact is, okay, we're just kind of going back to the beginning. Whatever happens next, if anything happens next, is going to resemble what we've seen before. And that's why I think this is, you know, the creator sort of hedging their bets, because if you can take things forward, great, you take it forward in a familiar form. If you can't, then you've closed the loop in an interesting way, just from standpoint of, hey, if you watch the show from beginning to end, assuming season 4 is the end, and then you start episode 1 again, you're back at the beginning of a loop. I like that as like a thematic mirror. I'm not like emotionally satisfied by it. But after the episode, I went back and watched the opening scenes of season 1, and some appear to be like recreated almost shot for shot, or maybe it's even the same footage. So
I can guarantee you, my sense was that they used footage from season 1 and then they digitally inserted Evan Rachel Wood into it because she looks really weird. Like, it's pretty close, but it's not perfect.
Like there's also an establishing shot of the train appearing as it rides through the mountains, and it's they use a very similar shot in the first episode, except this time there's no train and then it materializes.
So
in a sense she is recreating a world that is, you know, like she says, from her memory.
Yes.
So
for what purpose? For what end? We don't know.
Test. Dangerous game. Mystery.
Beautifully said, Siddhanth. Beautifully said. Yeah.
So, hey, you know, if you wanted to, you could watch the whole show and then start from the beginning and be like, this is, you know, season one, episode one is just season five, episode one.
Yeah. I think the core... Yeah,
that's cool, I guess.
I'm very disappointed at this outcome because, first of all, like, we don't... I don't even think this does a good job of setting up what the stakes are for next season. Like, they don't even... You, as you said, dangerous game for what? Like, my sense is based on from the rest of the show, like, humanity's survival will be at stake, right? Like, that's my guess based on what's happened this season, is humanity's survival will be at stake, or civilization's survival will be at stake, is my guess, right? But that's never clearly articulated.
Yeah.
And I'd be okay with them kind of being cagey about what's coming next season if they had done a good, if they had done a better job of explaining everything that happened this last season and closing that all out. Because I think we're probably going to get very little of that next season. I think, like, it's this season is done and the next thing will be a whole new scenario. So,
yeah. And I think, look, if what we saw in this episode had either made emotional sense or logistical sense, I would have at least found myself with a slight bit of optimism. If, you know, it made logistical and emotional sense, like some of the previous episodes mostly have, I would have been thrilled because that's the perfect, you know, marriage of what this show is. But it didn't make sense either way. It, you know, it was things being half explained, but not in a way that tells you what's going on externally or internally, what's going on plot-wise or emotionally. It's just things happen because certain storylines need to end, and I guess they need to set up certain new ones.
Yeah,
maybe.
I think the showrunners must have taken the advice to heart too much about not having too much exposition in the show. But they took it too far this time because now.
But at the same time, the episode was nothing but exposition.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So here's the question. If there is a Westworld Season 5, which, by the way, I'm very doubtful of because Westworld Season 1 and 2 was, like, expensive. It's expensive to bring a bunch of equipment out to the middle of the desert, you know, and, like, hire actors and take them out to the middle of the desert. Like, that's expensive to do. If there is a Westworld Season 5 with things back in the park again or a imagined recreation of it, like, is that something you'd be looking forward to? Like, what do you think? Does that intrigue you in any way?
I'd be curious to see where they go with it because it's, you know, since the first season, it's come so far from what it was conceptually that in the fifth season, it would hypothetically both be returning to exactly what it was, but also it will be further away from its initial concept than it has ever been. It will both be a show taking place in Westworld and also presumably a show where a lot of it, if not all of it, would also be taking place entirely virtually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm more curious than, you know, looking forward to it, so to speak. But I think there's one question that they really have to answer here if they want to continue Westworld. And that's, look, this is, you know, it's always been a show about, in some way, you know, not just consciousness, but life and death. And, you know, Teddy says at the end that, oh, there's another version of me somewhere out here. And we also don't know for sure whether or not Stubbs dies, but let's assume that he does. Is Stubbs' consciousness in the sublime? Mm-hmm. Is Stubbs in the sub?
I was like, I know where this is going. I don't know how you're going to get there. Nicely done.
You're welcome.
Nicely done. The last thing I'll say about the Christina storyline that I think is like, I'm intrigued by the idea because there is this religious concept that God has created and destroyed the universe very, like, many times. You know, I think you might be familiar with this idea. Very vividly illustrated in the Darren Aronofsky film Mother, actually, if you watch that movie. And so the idea of, like, destroying the world and recreating it is, like, it has very, like, religious roots. And that a show would even try to tackle something like that, again, I cannot fault it for its ambition. I wish this episode was not such a mess. But I like the concept, the idea. It intrigues me. And I'm like, what are they going to do with that? You know, that's kind of what my reaction is. But at the end of the day, Siddhanth, the season finale was not great. But I think this has been the strongest season that Westworld has had in many years, since season one, I would argue.
Yeah.
And it was very much worth the journey for me to go through it with you and with our listeners, who I've really enjoyed getting the emails from. We've read like every single email, and they've all been very fun and entertaining. We're going to try to continue this journey with TV, you know, at decodingtv.com. Mm-hmm. And if there is a Westworld season 5, probably we're going to be back covering it, you know, is my guess. So,
yeah. And but do you have any closing before we thoughts? Head out, I actually, yeah. Sorry, go on.
I was going to say, do you have any closing thoughts?
I do. I actually wanted to plug something really quick that I'm really excited to talk about. For once, I have something to plug that is very, very Westworld related. I actually recently for IGN interviewed Jeffrey Wright about his role as Stubbs. About his role as Bernard. I've got Stubbs on the brain. About his role as Bernard. For IGN this season. Boy, I messed that up. So yeah, go take a look at that. But more importantly, like, you know, David has been saying, we will be back really soon for our first recap under the new, you know, conceptually the new version of this show, which will be She-Hulk Attorney at Law.
Indeed. And I'm really psyched to talk about it with Siddhanth, and we hope you'll stick around on that journey. Keep it subscribed to this podcast. And if you want to support this podcast, go to decodingtv.com. Find us on YouTube at decodingtv.com/YouTube. Thank you so much to everyone who's been with us for this season. We hope you'll continue the journey with us. We'll see you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.